This is part two of the program.
President of South Africa, Thabo Mbeki, has had second thoughts about medicating his people with toxic drugs.
I think, or they say, we don't know exactly the story there, but they say that he found about our work and that of other people on AZT, on the internet, and he started to question the efficacy of giving AZT to African or to South African citizens. And I think he's a very courageous man. There is no doubt it's impossible for AZT to have an effect. And if he doesn't approve the use of AZT for Africans, I think he will do a big service to his people.
I asked Christine why, in light of the problems with the HIV tests, there is no public debate.
The tests have been around since 1984. AIDS itself has been around since 1981. And we've come a long way. And a lot of people have been diagnosed as positive. A lot of people, as a result, have taken courses in their lives that include having abortions, getting divorced, committing suicide, taking toxic drugs, cashing in their life insurance, going on disability. And there's powerful ramifications for all that we have constructed around our ideas about HIV and AIDS, ideas that are not, in my opinion, validated by proper science. To go back now and say, wait a minute, we've made some mistakes in our haste to come to conclusions and find answers, and we need to start over again, would open up a very uncomfortable discussion for a lot of people and would involve AIDS doctors who've dedicated their lives to this endeavor, scientists who've dedicated years and years of research, all coming to a grinding halt and establishing agreement that we need to start over again. I think it's human nature when you make a mistake that's really big to just sort of keep going and not go back and try to correct it, because the longer you go on, the bigger the mistake gets and the harder it is to correct.
The Perth group led by Professor Eleni Papadopoulos also argue that the HIV/AIDS experts have not proven that HIV/AIDS is infectious, either by blood, blood products or sexual intercourse.
Definitely there is no proof that the HIV and AIDS are sexually transmitted. The best study ever conducted, I mean, nobody has tried as hard and to prove that HIV is sexually transmitted than Nancy Paddian. And Nancy Paddian, after 10 years, and in the longest prospective study, has shown that no such thing happened.
In my interview with Christine Maggiore, I discussed the fact that pregnant women are frequently given the HIV test, and we learn the ramifications of this practice.
In many instances, when a woman is pregnant, the test is included as part of routine prenatal screening, and there's no opportunity for a woman to agree or disagree to take the test. Should the test come back positive, that's when trouble begins. Because even if a woman has no risk factors, no explanation for a positive test result, and factors in her life that would explain a false positive, doctors are unwilling to consider that a positive test result in a pregnant woman may be a false positive. And most doctors get very, very aggressive about the idea of drug therapies, the necessity of drug therapies, all of which are toxic and highly experimental. And around the world, it's becoming harder and harder for a woman to make an informed choice about a test and to make an informed decision to decline drug therapies should she come up positive.
Many of the women, their children and partners live in hiding from authorities who insist these women and their babies take toxic pharmaceuticals.
I work with a number of such women, and our organization seeks to prevent these sorts of situations from happening by putting women in touch with sympathetic and well-informed obstetricians, gynecologists, pediatricians, and midwives. But unfortunately, we hear from, I would say once a week, from a woman in a very difficult predicament with regard to an HIV test. And most of the women who contact us have absolutely no explanation, no reasonable explanation as to why they would test positive, except the fact that the tests are not specific, they're not able to diagnose HIV, and something else is reacting and causing them to have a positive test result.
More on the toxic effects of HIV/AIDS medicines on these women.
First of all, a test and a positive test will have devastating effects. Secondly, these drugs have never have been shown to be of any beneficial effect. Especially they're given AZT, which is impossible. Even if we assume that there is proof for the existence of HIV, it is impossible for AZT to have an anti-HIV effect. AZT is impossible to have an effect against HIV. AZT, the way it is given to patients, is not an active drug. It's called a prodrug. For AZT to have an anti-HIV effect, AZT, which is given to the patient, has to be metabolized in the body into a different form. And only that form, every expert admits, only this metabolized form can have an effect against HIV. And yet, AZT was given for many years to patients without any evidence that is metabolized in the body. And now there is ample evidence at present that AZT is not metabolized. It is impossible to have an anti-HIV effect. On the other hand, it has a lot of toxic effects.
Professor Eleni Papadopoulos speaking there.
They're cornered into taking these drugs. They're told they don't have a choice if they want to be a responsible parent and a responsible mother. We know some of the effects of these drugs in the people who take them. For instance, AZT can cause 5 of the official AIDS-defining illnesses all on its own, including T-cell depletion, which is supposed to be what AIDS is, muscle wasting, lymphoma, life-threatening diarrhea, and dementia. Those are just 5 of the side effects that AZT has on the woman who's taking it. With regard to the baby and the fetus, we have no idea what the long-term effects are, but some of the short-term effects are rapid progression to disease and death in infants whose mothers have taken this drug. Babies can be aborted spontaneously due to deformities in the fetus. They can be born with extra digits, holes in their chest, enlarged craniums, all sorts of problems. And we know that AZT affects the cellular DNA, so it will be many, many years before we understand the full ramifications of this drug, which is designed to destroy DNA chains as they're forming in the body. And what is a baby other than forming DNA?
Christine Maggiore again. 10 years after Christine Maggiore was declared HIV positive, she was diagnosed with an AIDS-defining condition. First, what is an AIDS-defining condition? Christine Maggiore.
Chronic yeast infection, to other kinds of cancers such as lymphoma, to tuberculosis, salmonella, bacterial infections of various sorts. There's a whole list of things, and interestingly, none of these AIDS indicator illnesses happen only to people who test positive. All of them have very well-known causes and well-known treatments that have nothing to do with HIV. None of them are new and came about as a result of the beginning of the AIDS epidemic in 1981. So it gives you a lot to think about.
The diagnosis of Christine's AIDS-defining condition was based on a grade 3 pap smear with cervical dysplasia, a result that insinuates cancer. Cervical dysplasia and cervical cancer were added to the AIDS definition in 1993, causing the number of women classified with AIDS to increase notably. As an outspoken representative for alternative AIDS views, a full-time mascot for healthy HIV positives, and a new mother for the second time, tackling this challenge was the last assignment that Christine wanted. However, Christine Maggiore again sought a second opinion. I spoke to Christine about her episode of having an AIDS-defining condition.
Recently, you were told that you had an AIDS-defining condition, this being cervical dysplasia, which can result in cervical cancer. So, again, you had a very scary event.
Yes, and it's all based on that test that really can't tell who's HIV infected or HIV positive at all. Because I had what was considered an irregular pap smear of grade 3, indicating cervical dysplasia, I was considered to now have AIDS, because cervical dysplasia and cervical cancer are regarded as AIDS-defining illnesses, but only in women who test positive on these very nonspecific and inaccurate tests. In 1993, the U.S. changed the definition of AIDS to include those, and that caused the number of women who could be diagnosed with AIDS to substantially increase. However, in this country, 99% of all women diagnosed with cervical dysplasia and cervical cancer are not HIV positive, but when it happens to a woman who's positive, that's considered the effects of HIV and therefore AIDS. When I was given this diagnosis, I doubted it because I have come to doubt most medical diagnostics. I know that they can be very unreliable, and that the pap smear slide in particular is only viewed by a laboratory for a matter of mere seconds before a determination is given. So I asked my healthcare provider to redo the test. At first, she suggested that I was in denial about this. She apparently expected, because I test HIV positive, for eventually me to become ill with some AIDS-defining condition, and she finally had her thoughts come true, it would appear. I insisted, and the test was redone, and it came back grade 2. The grade 2 test that came back was then considered indicative of human papillomavirus, HPV, which is considered a sexually transmitted disease. However, I've never had a sexually transmitted disease, neither has my husband. We've been faithfully married and together for 6 years. So again, I wanted another test, and at that point she told me to leave and go somewhere else. I eventually did take another test, but this time I did not reveal my HIV status or even my correct name, and my results came back normal. So that was my adventure in having a temporary diagnosis of AIDS for a few months while I worked out the diagnostics. It's upsetting to get a diagnosis. I got it basically on the 10-year anniversary of being told I was HIV positive and would die from that, and now I was being told that I could die from cancer. And I was upset by this on a lot of different levels, but part of me knew that I cannot count on these kinds of diagnostics to determine my future. And I had to fight a battle of wills with various health practitioners. I went through 3 gynecologist before I could find one who would give me an unprejudiced test. It was, you know, a fight against even people with the greatest of intentions, one of whom wanted to give me a free colposcopy. They were urging me to be responsible because I am a mother and I have 2 children, and my idea of responsibility goes further than just listening to authorities. It goes into investigating and determining for myself and my best judgment what is best for my life. And that takes a bit of determination, especially among health practitioners and in a system that would like to write off women such as myself who are HIV positive as moribund. I've come to learn that pap smears are very, very unreliable, that most women between the ages of 25 and 40 have had at least one experience similar to mine of a changing diagnosis with regard to pap smears, sometimes discovering this only after they've subjected themselves to invasive procedures that can cause harm. I've also learned that, in general, information about women's health is prejudicial and assumptive. For instance, human papillomavirus being called a cause of cancer is not based on any sound scientific studies. It's based on a rough correlation between the presence of HPV as diagnosed through these very unreliable tests and the fact that some women with this diagnosis develop cervical cancers, but there's no causal relationship, no evidence that HPV can cause cervical cancer in any medical literature that I have come across or any of the scientists and doctors I consult with have come across.
Christine Maggiore, author of What If Everything You Thought You Knew About AIDS Was Wrong, describes what happened to a young woman who was also wrongly diagnosed as having an AIDS-defined condition.
A very sad story with regard to that is a lovely woman that I met just the year before from South Africa. She spent Thanksgiving of 2001 here with me and my family. She was here because she had been diagnosed with cervical cancer and worked for a cruise line that has their main offices in the Los Angeles area, and she was here for medical treatment. During the course of that medical treatment, it was discovered she tested HIV positive. Now, these tests are unreliable, unable to distinguish who's actually HIV infected, and they can react with conditions such as multiple pregnancies in your medical history, with immunizations, with other infections, and produce positive results. Despite that fact, she was told because she tested positive, her cervical cancer was AIDS, and she was treated very differently, very prejudicially. In her particular case, normally a woman would have a hysterectomy, but because she was viewed as having AIDS, they didn't want to do the surgery and instead gave her massive doses of radiation, so massive that they ended up not only burning her skin from her navel all the way back to the base of her spine, but the radiation perforated her colon, and she died of bacterial infections from her blood becoming contaminated with fecal matter from her perforated colon. They did say she died of AIDS. In fact, they said anybody who's positive and dies of AIDS, no matter what the circumstances. And her situation, while it does speak to the issue of prejudice with regard to people who test positive, it does reflect a larger discussion. In this country, we have somewhere between 350 and 400,000 people at best count who die of common medical procedures, in which there's no particular malpractice or purposeful or accidental mistakes made, but who just die from the effects of medical care. Every year there are some 100,000 people in this country who die from properly prescribed and correctly taken prescription drugs. So just seeking out the care of a doctor sometimes can be dangerous to one's health unless one is alert and prepared to stand up for oneself.
How then did Christine's experience with being defined as having an AIDS-defined condition and emerging as a well woman confirm her beliefs about the erroneous nature of these HIV tests and diagnosis?
Well, certainly it appeared at first to challenge them, because they say the conventional wisdom is that 10 years from a positive diagnosis, if it hasn't occurred already, one can expect to become ill. So from appearances, it would have confirmed that line of thinking. However, because I went a little deeper into my thinking about this and into the diagnostics and pushed my ability, I guess you could say, and my right to be normal, I was able to exit the situation not with an AIDS diagnosis, but triumphantly affirming that the evidence for HIV causing AIDS doesn't necessarily add up, and certainly the evidence for the reliability of pap smears and the whole notion that you can use them to diagnose HPV, that this causes cancer. I feel that I left that foundation a bit shaken as well.
How does the myth of HIV equals AIDS continue?
By incredibly effective public relations. Most news stories we read are merely PR spins on news and events that are beneficial to whatever company is placing them in the media. By government organizations that have grown in tremendous numbers and in tremendous power through the amount of dollars funneled into the whole AIDS paradigm, that once these giant agencies are set in motion, it's very difficult to turn them around, kind of like the Titanic. You just can't turn them on a dime. And also the problem with culpability. If it were known more widely that the tests used to tell people that they're going to die of AIDS have absolutely no ability to diagnose HIV infection, I think that there would be a lot of resistance to the ideas of testing at all, and to the idea of drug therapy based on these tests. So because the systems are so large and so deeply entrenched, and so many of us have emotional investments in this issue, along with a lot of people with fiscal investments, it becomes a very difficult situation to bring light to.
Christine Maggiore, author of What If Everything You Thought You Knew About AIDS Was Wrong.